Sam Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In the wake of the Israel-Hamas war, FBI Director Christopher Wray warns that the risk of a terrorist attack on the U.S. has risen, quote, to a whole other level not seen since the emergence of ISIS.
We shouldn't stop conducting our daily lives, going to schools, houses of worship, and so forth, but we should be vigilant.
The FBI is also probing anti-Semitic threats against students at Cornell University. And today, New York's governor announced a person of interest in custody.
Every single New Yorker has a right to feel safe and to be safe.
Meanwhile, in Nevada, a judge has scheduled a November 13th hearing in the case of John Anthony Miller, charged with making violent, vulgar, anti-Semitic threats toward Democratic Senator Jackie Rosen, showing up outside her Las Vegas office.
That's CBS's Scott McFarlane reporting. Israeli airstrikes reduce a refugee camp near Gaza City to rubble. CBS's Tina Krause in Tel Aviv.
Only craters remain where buildings once stood. Rescuers are using their hands to dig out bodies from the rubble. This man holding a bag cries out, "Here they are, children. We are filling up bags with children." The dead are lined up outside a nearby hospital. Inside, corridors are filled with the wounded. This doctor saying, "We have no idea what to do. There are injured everywhere."
The White House says if passed by both chambers, President Biden would veto a House Republican bill to provide aid to Israel but not Ukraine, which includes cuts to funding the Internal Revenue Service. The company that builds Chrysler's, Dodge's, and Jeep's lost a lot of money because of the auto strike, but not as much as its competitors. WWJ's Jeff Gilbert explains.
The strike cost both GM and Ford over $1 billion. Stellantis puts its price tag at $795 million. Chief Financial Officer Natalie Knight.
It's a smaller piece of our overall business than what you see from our U.S. competitors, and it's a place where we start with a very high and healthy profitability level.
A jury finds Tesla's self-driving car did not have a defect when it crashed with the autopilot engaged, killing two people on a highway east of Los Angeles. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Tesla's position at the trial was that there was no real evidence that autopilot was being used at the time of the accident. And if anything, it's possible that the driver was drunk at the time.
Renewed appreciation for the traditions of Halloween in Lewiston, Maine, after last week's deadly mass shootings. Lisa Caron says her family has been trick-or-treating and trying to help her daughter move on from the tragedy.
Kind of trying to do a little bit of the community support and, you know, kind of getting out there and letting her see it's not a big, scary world.
This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
According to a recent report, Planned Parenthood continues to rake in billions despite dwindling clients. The biggest takeaway here is that Planned Parenthood is generating vast profits, including millions in taxpayer funding. And Preborn, that's you and me, are stealing their clientele, meaning the babies they are trying to kill. Preborn operates on a very slim budget as they rescue over 200 babies' lives every day, and they receive no government funding. Preborn's network of clinics are situated in the darkest corners, competing head-to-head with the abortion giants, and they need our help now more than ever. When you donate $28 to Preborn, you will offer a free ultrasound to an expectant mother caught in crisis. Once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life, her baby's chance at life doubles. Please sponsor a precious baby's life. Your tax-deductible gift will go directly towards saving babies' lives. So be generous. You will never regret saving a baby's life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com/give life. That's preborn.com/give life. Sponsored by Preborn.
Expected to drive demand. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
The Packers trade Rasul Douglas. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A shocking move by Green Bay Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst today, just before the NFL trade deadline. He sends veteran defensive back Rasul Douglas to the Buffalo Bills. Also, a fifth-round pick goes to Buffalo. In return, the Packers get the Bills' third-round pick in next spring's draft. That means that the Packers will have five picks in the first three rounds of the 2024 NFL draft. Now, Douglas has been vocal and frustrated about this four-game losing streak, beginning in Las Vegas against the Raiders, last week against the Broncos.
No, I'm sick of seeing y'all come in here.
This week you said you're sick of seeing
everybody. Yeah, they mad. But we just lost to Denver. Not saying that they terrible, but come on.
Sources say he did not request the trade, but is looking forward getting to a Super Bowl contender with the Bills. NBA, Milwaukee Bucks headed to Toronto. They play the Raptors tomorrow night. Tip-off time, 6 o'clock, with sports on Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly clear skies tonight with lows around 20. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. High of 39 tomorrow. 27 tomorrow night. Cloudy. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
CNBC.
We're collecting batteries from the field and bringing them back in and making new battery materials out of them. The fact that we are getting a certain amount of government support has really also helped catalyze some of the investors, the private money that is coming in.
And remember, EV batteries can be recycled and reused. Fossil fuels can't.
In Deep Red, Kentucky. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like Kyrsten Sinema is in a little trouble there in Arizona as the latest polling has come out from the NRCC poll. Ruben Gallego is up, 41%. Kari Lake, 37%. Incumbent Sinema, 17%. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. And look, she'll get her cushy gig on Wall Street, and I'm sure her coffers will be full. But, you know, Senator Dipsy Doo will be gone, and I will be very happy about that. But here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. In fact, you know, some big labor victories going on. I've asked our good friend Max Burns to come talk with us. Max is a Democratic strategist, columnist, and founder of Third Degree Strategies. Max, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be back, man.
It's been too long. So what do you think of the Sinema thing? Surprised?
Listen, I think this is incredible news. I mean, I think earlier on, I was one of the Democratic strategists who was kind of worried at what Kari Lake getting in might mean and the unification of GOP money behind her. I worried that a three-way race with Sinema in there, she may play spoiler. But as it turns out, her popularity numbers with every single demographic in Arizona are so low that she's not actually causing a problem. I mean, Ruben Gallego has lucked out in finding maybe the most unpopular person in America to split a ticket with. So this looks great for Democrats.
Yeah, might hold on to that seat. And look, in a year that's going to be difficult for Democrats to hold on to the Senate, this is good news.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll take any good news we can get. I mean, between this and UAW, it's a rare week of good wins for the good guys here.
No,
it can feel like we're a little fighting on the back foot with all of this MAGA ascendant stuff in the House. So it's good to remember that our agenda is widely popular with voters. And in every poll, in every special election, we've seen Democrats outperform. So let's actually behave like we're winning, because we are.
And what I love about Sean Fain, and I talked about this at the beginning, what I love about what he's doing is saying, look, we're not just going to sit back and go, hey, we won a great contract. He's saying, hey, we're going to go out and start organizing those non-union companies, getting them under our agreement. And I don't know if you saw this, 2028, May Day of 2028, he's talking general strike, which I got to tell you, something I don't think has ever happened in this country. But to start planning for that and re-engaging labor in a way that, organized labor, hugely exciting.
Yeah, I mean, there was some doubt when this Detroit strike started that this was the right strategy, doing these sort of staged strikes at facilities instead of going all at once. But Sean Fain, UAW, said they were willing to go as far as they needed, not to push them or to test their resolve. And as it turns out, that was right. I mean, it was an absolute winning strategy. And this adds to a year that's been marked by win after win after win for the labor movement. So I have a lot of enthusiasm here, and I just hope we see more of it.
No, here's the thing. And look, you know, someone emailed me, and we went back and forth over, you know, Sean Fain's this great leader. And look, he's a good leader. I give him credit. He's hitting all the right points, but he's got an active militant base of members who are willing to follow him into the fire. That's what you need. And I think we're in a moment where working people have had enough and are ready to take on the big special interest, the big money interest, and take on these big corporations.
Yeah. And I think as we talked about when you joined me on when I was guest hosting on Sirius, the idea that these young Americans, many of whom have never been a member of a union, have never had parents who are a member of a union, may not know anyone who's ever been part of a union, are organizing and successfully unionizing places all around the country. I mean, this is such a huge moment. It's something I think Democrats need to talk about more. Because to your point, you know, Joe Biden has delivered more for unions and for labor than certainly any Democrat since Harry Truman, Franklin Roosevelt. And it's not something we see talked about that much outside of union circles.
Yeah, or this program here. One of the things, you're a columnist. I'm hoping people like you latch on to what came out of these negotiations. Because you remember early on, the mainstream media was, how dare they ask 40%? How dare they demand a 32-hour work week? How dare they demand these things? One, first thing, this is how you negotiate. You throw out a lot of stuff, and then you work your way back. You don't start with what you would accept and then end up with less. And the other thing, and I'm hoping that people grab onto this, this talk about a 32-hour work week. Look, you know, back in the 1880s, you know, the 8-hour day, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will, was not popular. Not popular with the business community, not popular with the wealth class, and even with the workers they didn't believe it was possible. And look, we've taken it for granted for over 100 years. I want in 100 years from now people to go, hey, you know, that 40-hour work week that they used to have 100 years ago, how archaic was that? And we can start that ball rolling. And I give Fain credit for putting that on the table and getting it out in to be debated. And maybe somebody grabs onto it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the really impressive thing about this victory, is that it shows, to your point, the limits of the possible. We had this idea when these negotiations started. Ford said there was just no way to ever get to 30% pay raise over the next few years. The money just didn't exist. And yet here we go with a signed agreement for exactly that. And it's a reminder that these executives lie to you, that they don't necessarily care about commitment to the truth, and they will get away with whatever they can get away with. The difference here, I think, is you have a lot of union workers who took huge cuts to save these auto companies during the big crash, who then took more cuts to keep things going during COVID, and saw their executives raking in all of these bonuses. I mean, that's a kind of anger that doesn't go away easily. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Max Burns. Max is a Democratic strategist, columnist, and the founder of Third Way Strategies. You can check out his work. I forget, maxburns.com?
Oh, God, no. That's actually a Republican state senator from Georgia.
Uh-oh.
Who is a terrible election denying, vote suppressing. He's not the good Max Burns.
Well, give me a website where I can find your stuff, Max.
You can find me at maxburns.substack.com or Twitter at TheMaxBurns.
I knew it was somewhere along there. We'll get links out on social media, even if I screwed it up. Now, I got to get some of your thoughts on the House. Seems that they've gotten away from vacation. They're going to get back to doing bad work. I say the coming of Christian Sharia laws around the corner with the new speaker, Mike Johnson. Any thoughts?
I'm just shocked it took the media so long to pick up on this. I mean, Mike Johnson may be a fairly unknown quantity to the mainstream media, but to people who actually follow conservative politics, MAGA politics, he's pretty well known. I mean, he's a guy who's known as a Christian nationalist in the truest sense, has said multiple times very proudly that he thinks there should be a religious test to hold public office, that our laws should be put up against Christianity as a test for whether they're sound law, that you should have to swear an explicit oath of belief in God to serve in public office, something our founders would have considered reprehensible, indefensible. And on top of it, it's a guy who doesn't mind a government shutdown. So we're going into, in 2 weeks here, another shutdown standoff with a Speaker of the House who, for the first time, thinks it's a great idea to have the government shut down, even if that throws millions of people out of work. So I don't think the American people are ready for what they're about to get.
No, and I said from the beginning, I think we've earned what we're going to get. I think we have to see just how extreme they are. Now, as someone, you know, reminded me, and I've said this before, you know, Jim Jordan, you look at him and you know that guy's crazy. You know this is a bad dude. This guy, there's a little bit of normalcy. You know, he looks like, you know, the neighbor next door, you know, the crazy neighbor next door, but still he doesn't seem as extreme on the surface until he opens his mouth.
Yeah. And the problem is Mike Johnson loves to talk about these issues. I mean, why in God's name the Republican Party would elect a speaker whose main characteristics are being incredibly anti-abortion and incredibly anti-gay and being the architect of the January 6th attempt to overthrow the election at a time when those are the three issues that sank them in 2022.
Yeah.
And now, instead of running away from those issues like Mitch McConnell has said they need to do, like Mitt Romney has said they need to do, they've tied themselves to those issues so close there's no breathing room. So this is going to be a wild 2024.
No, it's going to be very interesting. But I have a theory on this. I think that they did this simply so that becomes the story, that takes all the oxygen out of the room where they're chasing down all of the crazy things. Because we got a clickbait media who wants, you know, the latest salacious story. So he's going to be the story. And not the fact that the Republicans are so dysfunctional that nothing's going to happen, that they're going to do nothing to make working people's lives better, that they have no vision, no agenda, no policy. They've got nothing, but we've got all this craziness of this guy who, you know, erased all of his podcasts and his wife who erased her company's website and just the plethora of crazy that comes along with it. That's, I think, what we're going to be spoon-fed for the next year.
Great. I mean, these are things that the majority of American voters find totally toxic. I mean, if the best Republicans can do to distract from their inability to govern is to talk about how much they hate reproductive freedom, how much they hate gay Americans, how much they hate immigrants, and how much they want to shut the government down, I mean, that's a huge boost for Democrats. When elections are decided based on abortion, Democrats win by 30 points. Yeah. So by all means, put Mike Johnson on TV every day talking about what Republicans want to do. It'll be the easiest walk Democrats have ever had.
That is the hope. But you look at states across the country that are doing some really creative map drawing. I look at North Carolina. I look at Ohio. I look at South Carolina. I guess they've got some creative stuff. I worry about that. Lastly, I got to get some of your thoughts on the presidential race. You've got Mike Pence, who dropped out, and he's debating on who he's going to throw his heft behind. Any suggestions for Mike on who he should endorse for the Republican nod?
I'm not sure how many people are going to be competing for Mike Pence's supporter. You know, it's not really that big of a demographic as we've seen, though. I Mike Pence, you know, kudos to him, I guess, for saying the election was legitimate. That's where the bar is in the party. But as this shows you, the truth is not the way to win the Republican nomination right now. Yeah. You play to their insane chaos or you get out of the way.
And speaking of insane chaos, you've got Ron DeSantis. Did DeSantis send guns from Florida to Israel? Because I've heard the story. I'm just kind of wondering, you know, how he accomplished that.
Do you remember when Ron DeSantis used to be talked about as a serious candidate? Like when the Republicans considered him at one time the guy to beat Donald Trump. And now the only time you hear about him is when something insane has happened in an interview he's done. I mean, this week he was in the news because he did an interview with Patrick Bet-David, the entrepreneur, where Beth David accused him of wearing lifts in his boots, essentially wearing high heels, and then challenged Ron DeSantis to wear regular sneakers live on camera, and DeSantis refused. I mean, this is where his campaign is at. He is the punchline of this primary, and everything he's doing to try and reset is only making it worse.
You know, again, you know, I look at the guy and I feel for him because he's unlikable, like Jim Jordan, just completely unlikable. But I thought at least some of the policies that he was pushing would make Republicans come along, and even they don't like him, which is kind of funny. And I think it has a lot to do with the Trump effect, sure, but other than that, the guy is just bad.
Well, he's also getting desperate. I mean, the campaign has been open that it needs money. It's running out of money. His super PAC, Never Back Down PAC, is backing down in five states. They're closing offices. Ron's increasingly saying it's going to be Iowa or bust, so he'll be a winner there or he'll be out.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not the decisions of a guy who's running a campaign designed to win.
Yeah.
And he says, we'll focus on the issues and we'll win. But buddy, they're holding up charts of how your feet are sliding into your boots and heels. This is not the banner you want for your campaign.
There you go. That image. Now that image is not getting out of my head because of you, Max.
I'll tell you, if you look on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, if you type in DeSantis boots, for every single positive thing you see, there are hundreds of people who have broken down in meticulous videos how his feet move in the shoes and how strangely he walks in them. It's fascinating. You can spend hours down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I got better things to do, but I appreciate you putting that image now into my head. Max Burns, Democratic strategist, columnist, founder of Third Degree Strategies. Max, always great. You got to come back and talk to us again real soon, buddy.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
Thanks so much, our good friend Max Burns. Want to hear your thoughts. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Yeah, during the break, I'm looking at Twitter, and yeah, there's tons. Twitter's like a space of if you want to see dumb stuff, there it is. Oh, there's DeSantis in his boots. High heels and boots. Let's go to the phones. We got Steve on line one. Steve, how are we doing today?
Fine. And I want to touch on a couple of things that you've discussed. I mean, one with regard to Johnson, it's my understanding that, you know, after the debacle that was, you know, so many heir apparents that fell through the floor, the Republican Party was in crisis mode. And basically, you know, they decided, okay, stop taking these public votes in which we look like idiots. So they went behind closed doors and they asked themselves, all right, you crazies in the Freedom Caucus, who's acceptable to you? And then the more mainstream Republican Party, okay, who's acceptable to you? And they came up with a guy who's got a little bit more than 6 years of experience in the House. Pretty much nobody knew of him, as a number of people have said. You know, well, I had to Google the guy because, again, you know, who is he? You know, when you've got a little over 6 years of time in the House, I mean, you're pretty much a backbencher. But he was acceptable. And I think his strength lies in the fact that he's not the Matt Gaetz type of sort of burn down the house if I don't get my own way. He has some really radical views, but is he willing to govern based on those at all costs? And they're betting that he's not. That he, despite the fact that he holds these views, apparently if you met him at a cocktail party out at dinner or whatnot, you wouldn't know that he was as radical as he is. And the hope is that he doesn't govern in that way, which explains why he's taken so many steps in terms of he and his wife and everyone else to sort of, you know, use the magic marker to erase everything that they've posted in the past and said in the past, and, you know, try and look more mainstream. So I think that that's the reason that the Republican Party likes this guy and elected this guy. And quite frankly, it's because they know that there isn't much that's going to happen. I mean, in the next month, there is in terms of legislation. But after the holidays, I mean, it's an election year.
Right.
You know, the House is not going to be passing much. So in many ways, who the speaker is beyond the next few months doesn't really make much of a difference. So, you know, and I think that's the logic of this. Like I say, he's a nut, but he's a quiet nut. And again, I think he is willing to put party ahead of, you know, the sort of fanaticism. And you saw that in terms of the first press conference, in which the first reporter's question was exactly about being an election denier. And sure enough, everybody wanted to shoo that question away. No. So he didn't stand up there and say, yes, I think that there are questions, or I think that Donald Trump actually won. No. We don't want to be anywhere near those kinds of questions. And I suspect that that's the same attitude that he has about a lot of other issues, as Mitt Romney has pointed out. That is his position,
right,
in his perfect world, but it's not the position of the Republican Party in terms of winning.
So let me ask you this, Steve. Because, you know, you've laid out this argument, and I respect your view on it, that, you know, he's trying to clean up his image. He's going to try and govern. My view on it's a little different. My view on it is he's scrubbing the image because doesn't want any of this stuff found, and will pursue the extreme. He's already said impeachment is going to go forward. Will the messaging bills that are going to come out, I do view, are going to be, you know, far to the right, which I'm hoping they do. I'm hoping that they do everything that the extreme is inclined to do, so that we show who they are. But I guess it comes back to, you know, my fear of normalizing this kind of extremism and saying, well, he's trying not to be who he is. So I'm struggling with that. Does that make sense?
No, and I absolutely understand that. And don't mistake what I've articulated here. I don't believe that he's a guy who's not going to forward anything crazy. I just think that he's going to pick and choose, recognizing full well that, you know, that it would be political suicide to forward some sort of national bill with regard to women's reproductive rights that is reflective of his views. Now, with regard to impeachment, I think, you know, yeah, that's a purely political move. You know, they want to appeal to low information voters so that, you know, when you talk about, okay, Donald Trump, the presumptive nominee, is facing charges, da-da-da-da-da, in various states on various counts, blah-blah-blah-blah. And they want to be able to say, well, Joe Biden's under impeachment or under investigation or for impeachment or whatnot. They want to be able to sort of balance that out as, yep, if, you know, it really balances out, when we all know it doesn't. But in the mind of idiots, you know, so they'll be able to say, well, both of them are equally to blame at this point. Again, ridiculous, but yeah, purely political. So, and the other thing is, you know, as you guys pointed out, and it's a really excellent point, no matter where the American people are in a given election cycle, the fact is that the way our system works is that only a third of the Senate is up for election every 2 years. And this coming cycle, it just so happens to be that the Republicans have a distinct advantage. So even if, you know, we do really well, the fact is that it's an uphill battle for us to retain control in the Senate. And that's just part of the system that we have in this country. You know, it may be in 2 years and 4 years, it can be a different landscape. But, you know, people need to understand. I'm amazed by how many people think that everyone runs in a presidential election cycle, and they don't. But that's the problem in terms of not having enough civics classes any longer.
No, I agree with you. Appreciate the thoughts, Steve. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
No, I mean, look, you know, the sad reality is, you know, if you don't vote, if you don't plan to vote in 24, if you're not registered, if you're allowed to be purged, like we're seeing in Virginia, like we've seen in Georgia and in Florida, like you're seeing in a lot of southern states, massive voter purges. If you don't get out and vote, there's a possibility that Republicans could run the table and you could end up with a Republican House, Senate, and president. Don't take anything for granted in this moment, you know, because understand, the economy is moving in the right direction. And yet you talk to the average citizen and they think the sky is falling. They think, you know, things are horrible. I had someone tell me they paid $9 for a dozen eggs. I went to the store. They're not $9, but it's still in their head. Eggs are $9. Not even close.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. On Capitol Hill, FBI Director Christopher Wray sounds the alarm over potential terror threats inspired by the Israel-Hamas war. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
The FBI director also said Al-Qaeda and ISIS have called for attacks on the U.S., but said at this time they're not tracking any imminent credible threats.
A Cornell University junior is in custody as the FBI investigates anti-Semitic threats at the school. An Israeli strike on a Gaza refugee camp leaves dozens dead, according to Palestinian authorities. CBS's Ramy Innocencio.
We're seeing these images of people trying to take people out of the rubble, out of the debris. The Hamas government is saying that this is a horrific massacre.
A jury finds Tesla's autopilot was not responsible for a deadly crash on a California highway. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum says the verdict means
we can't have you fall asleep, and we can't create the impression that autopilot means that you have no role at all in the maintenance and driving of your car.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's largest utility companies say they plan to end using coal as a fuel source sooner than they had expected. We Energies and the WEC Energy Group announced Tuesday they plan to stop using coal by the end of 2032. They had originally anticipated needing to use coal until 2035. They say they're moving up that date after they increased investments into renewable energy sources by over $1 billion. More teenagers are getting jobs in Wisconsin. The number of young people applying for work permits went up by 27% between 2019 and last year. That represents more than 37,000 workers. Republican lawmakers are trying to eliminate work permits. They say they're an unnecessary burden. On the other hand, fees from work permits pay for enforcing labor standards in Wisconsin. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio. Refresh.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly clear skies tonight with lows around 20. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. High of 39 tomorrow. 27 tomorrow night. Cloudy. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab. Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
In customers' homes, businesses, schools, etc. Specifically, Green Mountain will install television-sized storage batteries statewide in homes and buildings, each one soaking up wind and solar energy when the weather is right, releasing stored power when needed. This turns out to be far cheaper than building central power plants, having to constantly replace miles of electric lines down by storms and paying for widespread power outages. Plus, it delivers priceless customer goodwill by doing away with infuriating outages that shut down people's lights, refrigerators, medical equipment, etc. We don't want the power to be off for our customers ever, says McClure. Indeed, power outages cost U.S. utilities about $150 billion a year, while costing customers even more. That's a failed system. Green Mountain Power is turning away from business-as-usual greed, literally generating energy sanity. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's your utility doing?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as we've been talking about, big, big historic games at the Big Three for the UAW. And look, as I said at the beginning, looking at the 36-page document that was sent to me of all of the things at Ford that they got, I don't know how you vote it down, but you know, we'll see what happens with Stellantis and GM as they roll out what's coming in here to talk about. What's here? This historic moment and maybe where this takes us. I've asked Raymond Jensen to come talk with us. Raymond is a UAW director, assistant director of Region 9. Raymond, thanks for taking time for us.
Good evening, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So this is, again, pretty big deal. I mean, I'm looking at this document that was sent to me and, lots here.
It's historic. I mean, this is going to be life-changing for some of our members. Financially, it's life-changing. I just don't know how else to explain it. There's been so much that we've gotten back that people said was impossible. And it just shows what, we can do when we're united and when we stay strong and we stand together.
So, walk me through what some of the language that you think is most important. Walk me through some of that.
So they're going to reinstate the COLA formula, which was back to the 2009 language. It's going to be 3 years before somebody is made full time. They will start at 75% in the first year, 85% the second year, and they will be full rate by the third year. The starting rate, I believe, is going to be like $21 or $22 an hour. And by the end of the agreement, we're going to be making $43 for production and right around $50 for skilled trades. The profit sharing formula has been enhanced for Ford. 2 weeks paid parental leave. They did get Juneteenth off as a holiday. Everybody has 5 weeks of vacation. Sean and his team and negotiators and Chuck, they've all gotten things back that people said were impossible.
No, it's incredible. And as I was reading through this 36-page document, my mind goes to being an organizer, because I did some organizing back, 20 years ago. Going to prospective future members and going, here it is. This is what being a member gets you. But more than that, it's also the solidarity and the power of being, in a union and having, a say in work and the end of at-will employment, all that stuff. But in looking at everything in this document, man, as an organizer, fertile ground for bringing people around.
Absolutely. And I just saw yesterday that Tesla has formed a UAW organizing committee. Toyota's putting out their pay scale, trying to deter the members from wanting to become unionized. And part of the deal too with Ford was the right to strike over plant closures and the outsourcing of moratorium. So if they outsource any work or want to close a plant, we have the right to strike over that. And they brought up Rawsonville and Sterling Axle to full rate. Those people were on a different pay scale altogether. So when we stand together, who wouldn't want to be part of the UAW when you see what they're doing for their membership all across the country?
Now, what's come out of this and the conversations that I've had with people, this election recently where, the old guard was shown the door and Sean Fain was the guy and bringing power back to the members to vote for their president, much like the Teamsters did back years ago. And I remember being part of that fight, one person, one vote, to directly elect our leadership and clean up some of the things that were going on. This to me is that moment where the members took took back control of their union. And look, I love your president. I think he's got the right rhetoric. I think he does a good job of putting out the message. But to be honest, without a strong militant movement behind him, without the members at his back, he's just a guy who's got good words.
And absolutely, I agree with you. That's what Sean said from the very beginning. And I remember when we went up to Michigan Assembly Plant the night that the contract expired, and the media frenzy was a circus up there, and they were following Sean around. And at one point he turned to the reporters and said, interview the members, because this is why we're here. It's all about them. It's not about the leadership. It's not about us. Without them, we're nothing. And the stand-up strike is brilliant because it got people talking about the sit-downers, and we're being compared to the sit-downers, which is truly a great honor, right? I mean, to think what we've done and to think that they've struck all three companies at once and basically whipsawed the companies against each other is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. And the membership stood strong and they fought for social and economic justice.
Now, I saw Sean's comments of, 2028, May Day of 2028. A general strike he is calling for, attempting to organize labor, which hasn't really happened in my lifetime. I know there's been talk. My friend Sarah Nelson has talked of general strikes in the past. But this actually, I think, potentially could gain steam, given the fact that you have had this massive victory. And you've got new leadership at the Teamsters Union, who they seem to be a little bit more militant. The membership there. Tell me the vibe with this idea of a general strike.
Well, I got to tell you, I think it's great. I think, not only, people are questioning the 4.5-year contract, but not only is it going to expire, if we strike, it'll be on May Day, but hopefully these other organizations will have their contracts expire on the same day as ours. And when we have union density, we have union power, right? And I got to tell you, my phone's been ringing off the hook for places, smaller shops wanting to get organized within our region, just saying, hey, we've seen what's been going on and we want the help of the UAW. We want to be part of the UAW. And it's such a great feeling, because for so long, I was ashamed to wear that wheel on my chest. And now I'm proud. I'm very proud after 24 years to wear that wheel on my chest again.
No, I agree with the words that Sean Fain said. Look, our war against our one and only true enemy is multi-billion dollar corporations. And, I've said for years, it's not about red hat, blue hat. It's about the moneyed interest. It's about the business roundtable folks. It's about the people who sit up in these corporate suites and make these decisions without us. So to see this kind of victory is gives me hope that there is a future for workers in this country. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Raymond Jensen. Raymond is Assistant Director of UAW Region 9. I got to get your thoughts on what's going on at MAC, because they had a tentative agreement there. I thought it might go through. The membership voted it down. Where are we right now?
So the local agreement is done. They have a strong local agreement. They got some language straightened out. The national contract is still slow. The company basically, as Sean said, just wanted to rearrange the deck chairs and didn't really want to give the membership anymore. And they're standing up and they're ready to fight for their fair share. And speaking of Mack Trucks, we do have a rally there on this Thursday, November 2nd from 11 to 1:30. If anybody's in the area and they want to stop by, please feel free to do so and show some support to the members.
No, that's I hope people, if they're in the Allentown area, Makanji, they stop by. But this is one of those moments where you're talking about, taking on the moneyed interests. And one of the things that I found most encouraging is at the beginning of the Big Three strike, the companies were saying, there's just no more, we've got no more. And then to see where you've gotten in 6 weeks, where no more turned into 50% more, or probably a little more than that even, tells me that we're in a brave new world.
Absolutely. So I'll give you some comparison. So in 2019, the Ford agreement was worth $1.9 billion. In 2023, the Ford agreement is worth $9 billion.
Wow.
So they quadrupled what we got in 2019. There's products for pretty much every plant across the country. Here in Region 9, we have the Buffalo Stamping Plant. They got an $80 million product investment, which is going to guarantee the stamping for the new EVs. and some other future work. It's just great to see that, hey, you know, when these companies say there's no more, that's not going to fly with us anymore. There is still more to give.
Yeah. Now, what I find interesting, and again, I went through this 36-page document that was sent to me of all of the gains, and a lot of it focused on just what you said, investment into plants, making sure that these companies are investing in their own business so that there are jobs to be had. I found that to be, well, smart on one hand, but also visionary to say, look, we want to make sure these jobs are here in the future. We want to make sure the future of this industry is strong and that you're just not pocketing all of the wealth that's being created and not reinvesting in your business so that there is a future. And I think that's important to point out.
Absolutely. In Stellantis, they're going to reopen Belvedere Assembly with two shifts. They have a future product. Not only that, but they have the EV battery plant that's going to go there and a Mopar hub as well. They also got the company to agree that if they cut any volume, the volume has to be cut from Mexico, not from the United States. And with Ford, they brought back work to Sterling Axle from Mexico.
Wow.
So there's work brought back to the U.S. from Mexico.
That is awesome. No, look, because I loved my Jeep Patriot. It was made in Belvedere. And when they did away with that line, they went to, I think it was the Renegade that then was made in Mexico. And well, I couldn't buy that. Because again, check your VIN numbers, 145. Those are made in the U.S. Those are the only ones that I get. Sadly, you know, my wife's car's, you know, made in Canada. They've got the number 2, still UAW made. So that's on the approved list. But the Charger and the minivan we had. But make sure union made, American made products. Last line of questioning I've got for you here, and looking forward to all of this organizing, to all of this stuff that's going on at other auto plants, and to bring the movement together, what's the message for folks out there who, you know, aren't members of the UAW, who maybe might not be attached to the labor movement? You know, how are we reaching them? What's the message for them?
The message is to see what we can do as a union, and to see what we can do when we have solidarity and when we're organized labor. You know, and not let these unorganized companies take advantage of you with whether it be your pay, your hours, whatever the case may be. Just educate yourself and just look into the benefits of joining a union. And I think that you will understand why it is so important to have representation, not only for you, but for your family and for your future generations.
There you go. Raymond Jensen, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate you having me on.
Anytime. Again, it comes back to me, union job, better life. It's that simple. You want to make sure you get better wages, hours, conditions, health care, retirement, security. This is the pathway forward. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break, right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day that the completed Mount Rushmore Monument was dedicated in the Black Hills of South Dakota. The monument portrays massive sculptures of U.S. Presidents George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt hewn into the side of a mountain. Today, 3 million visitors view the sculpture each year. The project remains controversial because it was completed on land held sacred by the Lakota Sioux. 400 men worked for 14 years to complete the carvings. First, the men dynamited 450,000 tons of rock off the mountain. They then used jackhammers and hand chisels to complete the features of each of the president's faces. The sculptures were massive in scale. The president's faces are each as tall as a 6-story building. George Washington's nose is 21 feet long. Many of the men working on the project were miners who had first come to the Black Hills in search of gold. The men were paid $8 an hour, considered an extremely good wage for the time.
but they often had to endure layoffs as the funding for the project waned. Despite the dangerous conditions of completing such a project, not one worker died during its construction. Gulzon Borglum, a Danish-American sculptor, headed the effort. He died several months before its final completion, and his son had to oversee the end of the work. The head carver at Rushmore was an Italian immigrant by the name of Luigi Del Bianco. Del Bianco later died of ulcerated silicosis. His lungs were filled with silica dust from working on the carving. In a 1966 newspaper interview, Del Bianco declared, "I'd do it again," even knowing all of the hardships involved. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Jack on line one. Jack, how are we doing today?
All right. Beachy keen, as my granny used to say. there's two things I want to deal with here. First, the auto worker strike. People were shocked that the union was asking for a 40% wage increase, similar to what the CEOs got, of course. One talk show host that I heard was told that if every worker got a raise to $80,000, the automaker profits would drop from $22 billion to only $18
billion. Right.
Now, the host claimed, and this is a union guy, he claimed that the workers were already, they must be already making that much based on what he earned as a union worker in the 90s, but of course, because of the concessions, that wasn't accurate. When I researched it, I found out the average auto worker now makes about $53,000. So even this guy who was a strong unionist wasn't aware of the actual wages. And if you do the math, a 40% increase would be just under about $75,000. So that amount certainly wasn't out of line, and especially if you look at CEO salaries, but also even if you look at automaker profit.
No, the reality is in this, Jack, is if you look back into the 70s, what this contract does, as historic as it is, as lucrative as it is, only restores them almost to where they were back then. They're still not wage, when you consider the inflation of the time, still not in the in the 70s realm, but closer. And that is it. That's where they wanted to get. That's where the 40% number would have taken them back to where, had they just had their wages kept up with inflation from the 70s till today, that's where they would have been with a 40% increase. So, yeah, that's unforgivable to not know how bad things had gotten there and then taking a position on it. I don't know how you do that.
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying there. The other thing I wanted to mention is about the economy, and because you covered both of those on your program tonight. Yep. And somehow the Democrats have to repeatedly drive home, the economy is and has been absolutely great. Inflation's down. It's less than almost every other industrialized country. Average wages are up. Corporate profits through the roof.
Yep.
But Republicans continue to claim the economy's terrible. How can they make sure that claim is correct? They just don't have a budget agreement. That'll trash the economy. And I believe that, especially with this new speaker, that's their strategy. They want to give Israel $14 billion in aid, but cut the same amount from the IRS. And that's just a start. Because if you cut, for every dollar you cut from the IRS enforcement funding, you'll lose $12 in previously unpaid taxes that enforcement brings back in. And if you cut the government funding, then all of a sudden, well, there's not enough money, Republicans will say. So we can't allow a budget without draconian cuts, and they are absolutely necessary. And while this may sound a bit convoluted, it seems to me it's in line with the usual Republican program. Break the government and then try to blame the Democrats.
Exactly. Appreciate the thoughts, Jack. Thanks so much. Spot on, accurate. And look, you know, the reality is, and Jack hit the right point. The economy, for the most part, doing really well. Wages are going up. Inflation is coming down. We just haven't done enough in going after these gouging corporations. And I've been saying for a long time, where's this generation's Harry Truman?
You know, where's this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? Where's the trust buster? Where's the guy who's going after the profiteers and the gougers in moments of national crisis? You know, coming out of the pandemic, you had these corporations who are like, hey, this is a great opportunity to pillage. We can line our pockets. And one of the worst, again, is the oil and gas companies who have thousands and thousands of leases but won't drill them. Why? Because they're happy. And they've said this. This is the part that blows my mind. Because I get people say, well, Rick, the gas prices are so, you know, Biden, gas prices. And you go, yeah, set by corporate America. Are you telling me that you want Biden to nationalize the gas companies? Because that's the only way he can change the prices. This idea, well, you know, he stopped drilling. More leases have been given out during this administration than in my lifetime. They're sitting on thousands of undrilled leases. They don't want to do it. And, you know, just stop and think about it. If you could do half the work and make twice the profit, come on. Now, granted, you know, gas prices are going to go through the roof as they have been. But this has everything to do with corporate decisions. Now, if you want to start nationalizing oil companies, that's a discussion we can probably have. I doubt that conservatives, or at least, you know, what they tell me they believe conservatism is, I doubt they would want to go down that path, considering, you know, the oil and gas industry does line their pockets. But Biden's the scapegoat in this. And for me, it comes back down to, you have an administration that's doing things that in my lifetime, none of them have done before. This commitment to reshoring manufacturing, this commitment to investing in a future. You know, I talked yesterday about, you know, some of the surprise among people who are around Biden about how forward looking he is. And I'm like, you know, how can you be shocked that the old guy, and look, be honest, he's old, that the old guy is looking at a legacy, that the old guy is going, I want to leave something for my grandchildren. I want there to be something worth inheriting. I want them to go, gee, grandpa left us in great, great hands. And I think Joe Biden is doing that. And the thing that I love about him is he doesn't engage in the crazy. He just shows up and is just doing the work. Now the crazy's out there. And I look at today's quote of the day from Adam Kinzinger, who said, I really believe it's down to one issue on the ballot. It's not taxes, not even abortion, nothing. The one issue is, do you believe in democracy or do you believe in authoritarianism? And he's explaining why he voted for Democrats in the last two elections, because the Republican Party has lost their mind. Now, for Adam Kinzinger coming forward and saying, look, I believe in democracy. I think the Republican Party's lost their freaking minds. For that, and this is remarkable. Evidently, he says that he's had family members who sent him a certified letter disowning him. Because, and he said, quote, they said, I've lost the trust of great men like Sean Hannity. Which is funny that they believe that. They said I was a member of the devil's army. And the thing is we've all got family members who think this way. We've all got family members who not just drank the Kool-Aid, but have taken it intravenously. And are we surprised that when you start having people think this way, that crazy stuff happens? For instance, you've got this Nevada guy who has been charged with threatening Senator Jackie Rosen. Threatened to finish what Hitler started, he said. You got this Alaska guy who threatened to skin Lisa Murkowski and wear her flesh as a skin of clothing. And you go, look, there's a party that's off the beaten path. There's a party that's gone way fringe. And I look at Mike Johnson, who I'm sure is right in line with a lot of this craziness. And I'm not buying the, oh, we're going to
be transparent or, oh, we're going to do the governing. I'm not buying any of it. I'm buying him saying the nice words to be able to get through the crazy that he wants to get through, to normalize the kind of, and as I've said, I'll say it again, I believe these are people who want to bring a Christian version of Sharia law to this country so that they make sure that women are back in the kitchen, gays in the closet, and minorities in the fields. This is their worldview. This is the original intentist Christian white nationalist worldview. And look, this is the Republican Party. In fact, there was just a poll done by the Public Religion Research Institute. And they found 52% of Republican voters agreed with this statement. And I don't know why you would poll on this statement, because, oh my gosh, it's crazy. But the statement is, God intended America to be a new promised land where European Christians could create a society that could be an example to the rest of the world. 52% of Republicans agreed. 2 in 10 Democrats, 3 in 10 independents.
You're listening to The Shaw. Shaw.
WKK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.